listening to The People's Show.
You come at the King, you best not miss.
Left circle, Besser, one time slot shot, he scores. Brock Besser beats Jordan Binnington on the power play, and the Canucks are up 4-0.
With Seth, Dan, and Randeep.
The biggest thing to hit Canada because the Maple Leafs suck.
On the official home of the Canucks.
Goes all the way down the ice, here's Pettersson after it. He's got a chance at a breakaway. Pettersson in clean, is tripped by Murray, but he scores. Dinky Pete comes out of the box and puts the puck into the back of the net.
Sportsnet 650.
Welcome, citizens of the People's Show. We come to you live on Sportsnet 650 on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Randeep Janda. People's Show with you until 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 650. So much to come on the program today, as after 4 o'clock, Kevin Woodley will join us. 5 o'clock, Mark Schofield, Dan Rosen after 6. Lots of hockey talk, some football talk. And as always, we need you, the people. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber. Text line 604-280-0650 to get in on the phone line. We cannot be the People's Show without you, the people. We do have a pair of lower bowl seats to give out at some point today to the Canucks and Philadelphia Flyers tomorrow night at Rogers Arena, plus our NFL power rankings to come during the course of the program as well. Gentlemen, it was a fun night at Rogers Arena last night, even if the Canucks didn't pull out the victory. It was nice to have fans reacting to things. And I think the biggest moment for me, like the, oh, fans are back again. And Sat, we were sitting next to each other as it happened. Bo scores the goal to get the Canucks within one. And the place was really loud after that.
Yeah. And like the arena really roared back to life in that moment, right?
Yeah.
It was, that's the moment. Even because the intros were great, right? The fans were into it, and it was loud and everything. And it was great to kind of see everybody back and just have that vibe again. But that roar and that kind of – it was kind of cathartic almost from the fans. Like, they were just so relieved that finally Bo did somebody did something. And, you know, the crowd last night, I know some people kind of mentioned how it's, you know, it's kind of quiet. Man, the crowd was trying its best throughout that game to get going. They were trying to cheer just about anything positive that happened.
Yeah.
They were trying to cheer people on. They were trying to cheer the guys on. But, you know, the way Minnesota played, and maybe even more so the way the Canucks played, they kind of sucked the life out of the building in many ways.
Yeah, the crowd was begging to basically, you know, provide a pop, right? And that moment provided, it just, part of you also wonders, if you get that tying goal, that game and that sound of that arena is just off the charts. But it's just awesome to be back in the arena. Awesome to hear just the things we take for granted with the crowd too. Like the Tyler Myers chants, the oohs and the ahs, the ref you suck chant that happened a couple of times in the night. How long has it been since we remember that? Like, I'm usually not a huge ref you suck chant guy, but even yesterday I was like, this seems right. This seems just perfect. You know, even the BS chants, which are not safe for kids. It was just nice to have all of that back for one night. And I'm sure it's going to be just as wild, maybe a little bit more or less on Thursday. But hopefully the Canucks win, because at least that way the crowd will be able to pop off like they weren't able to last night.
Now, maybe in future, the Canucks will give them more to cheer about.
Mm.
Because right now, pulling any offense at 5-on-5 for this team is quite a bit of a struggle. You know, they score, Chiasson scores on the power play, so that is now validated, having Chiasson on PP1.
For now.
Yeah.
About 5 minutes.
Just going to leave an awkward silence there, because we all have the same thought on it.
Yeah, I mean, we can sit here and argue about it, but honestly, after last night, it's really, the power play is not a concern. Like, we can nitpick, of course, it has to be better. I don't like the way it's moving, and we've given our opinions on it, but it's not like it hasn't been productive. I mean, they've been scoring on the power play, at least. Yeah. At least the results on the power play, at even strength, the results aren't there.
No, and that's, you know, Bo scores at 5-on-5, but, you know, it's just a smart transition play, and Bo makes the most of the entire sequence, as we know, after getting the pass from Tyler Myers. But pulling offense for this team at 5-on-5 is a struggle right now. And I think that's where we need to start today, is how to diagnose this issue and how to fix it for a team that, you know, as I looked at the roster over the summer, I didn't expect offense to necessarily be the issue for this team. And yet, here we are, 5-on-5. They, quite frankly, don't generate enough. And per Natural Stat Trick, in the bottom five of the league in generating high-danger scoring chances.
Big problem.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, on one hand, and this is kind of what we talked about the last few games, you can actually look at it and say, hey, you know, defensively, they haven't been bad. They haven't been great. But, you know, we'd all take how they're playing defensively, you know, if we entered into the season. It's more about, you know, are you generating enough offense, right? Are you doing enough things to be successful? And I think that's the biggest question we kind of had about the team was, hey, they're showing something defensively, but offensively, where is that kind of coming from? And is it a system thing, but is it actually more about your top guys not producing? And I think it's really looking at your top six, right? Your top six is being outchanced consistently while they're on the ice. We saw a good flash from that Horvat, Garland, Pearson line, but even those guys have been getting outchanced when they're on the ice. So clearly, that's the main issue here, I think, for this team at even strength is, are you actually going to get back to generating offense?
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about, you know, offensive zone possession and having the puck, but the last two games, what have we seen? We've seen maybe not the most puck possession time in the offensive zone. You've also seen, yeah, Ricci mentioned bottom five in the league when it comes for high danger chances created, but against, there's only one team ahead of them right now, and that's the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. And we've seen how the Leafs play. You don't want to be second to the Leafs in that department. So Thatcher Demko has helped you out in certain games, namely Seattle. But you need your offensive stars to pick up their game. You need your top six. You need your top line to eventually turn it around. And this brings us back to the Elias Pettersson example, right? Elias, not looking right. He's not looking confident. And even that experiment of sending him down to play with Highmore and Nils Höglander and maybe simplify his game, you know, Nils Höglander has been that player that kind of wakes people up and he drags them into the fights. I know how you love that phrase.
Yeah, I ranted about it again
but,
last night.
You know, Reach, I think you mentioned it earlier really well, is that Höglander is Mr. Fix-It. Yesterday on that line, he was Mr. Irrelevant because the whole line just kind of was meh.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing, right? This does come down to your best players and elevating their game. It's coming real slow to Elias Pettersson right now.
Well, Miller, Besser, Podkolzin actually generated a little bit when they were mm-hmm. together. It was, you know, Horvat's line was pretty quiet last night too, and they scored the goal late, of course, but in the overall didn't generate a ton. And then, yeah, the Pettersson line was fairly quiet. And when Travis Green, you know, Travis Green's been here long enough that we kind of know the lingo a little bit. When he says a player's been average, he doesn't necessarily mean average. Yeah. Average in Travis's book is below average,
yes.
To put it lightly, as we've kind of started to learn over the years. And yeah, I don't disagree with his assessment on Elias Pettersson. The question is, should we be putting essentially all of the Canucks as a whole, their offensive woes as a team, on Pettersson's shoulders? Does it fall on him to be the one that leads this group moving forward?
Well, he's got to be better than he's been. I don't think there's any question about that, right? I mean, I don't think anybody disputes the fact that Pettersson hasn't been good enough. But I do think it's interesting that he's bearing the brunt of the criticism for what is a collective failing in that top six, right? And, you know, we can talk about, you know, systems and all that stuff all we want, right? And, you know, sometimes I think that stuff really gets overblown, right? Because it's not like the team is being told, don't go out and generate scoring chances, right? It's not like they're coming out and saying, yeah, listen, be more defensively mindful, but don't go and score offensively. So what's going on here? Is it a fact of, hey, the players are adjusting to being a bit more, say conservative? Has a forecheck really changed? Travis pushed back against that last night and said the forecheck hasn't really changed. When you watch it, you see them be less aggressive. Now, is that because coaches are telling them to be less aggressive, or are the players just hesitating for a moment, or are they being a bit too mindful about their responsibilities? And on one hand, maybe you look at it and say, hey, you know what? It takes time. Once these guys figure out and feel comfortable about how they're playing with the team structure without the puck, and now they feel better about how to take a chance and what to do, maybe it comes together. But to me, that's the collective issue. It goes beyond Elias Pettersson here right now, right? Because what Pettersson's going through is the same thing that pretty much everybody on that line is going through. Now, at even strength, the biggest issue Pettersson's had generally now is he just doesn't look at all like the same player. And he had a couple of good plays the other night. I mean, he got set up to chase on the power play. He had that great pass to Hoglander coming down the right wing. And if he scores on that, we're sitting here talking about multiple game and, hey, look at Pettersson making a pass only he can make. So there are moments where you see that flash. But to me, the top six is having the same issue. Every single line has the exact same high danger scoring chance differential. Nobody's in the red. Nobody's in the black. They're all in the red.
Yeah,
and they're all going through the same issue.
There's three players in this entire lineup, guys, that are at 50% high danger chances created and against. And that's Nils Höglander, Justin Dowling, Vasily Podkolzin. Of those three, none are consistently in the top six, right? Podkolzin's had a cameo there every now and then, but nobody's consistently in that top six. When it comes to Pettersson, and you're right, Sat, this is a bigger than Pettersson conversation when it comes to the system, when it comes to playing a certain way consistently, but he is the catalyst. He is an important piece on that first line. His timing and confidence, there's a trickle-down effect there. When your best player is not right, it will have a trickle-down effect on the rest of the team, and we're starting to see that a little bit where when your most confident player is not at his best, the line mates are going to be maybe not as confident. The rest of the team may not be as confident. So I get it. The system, definitely, there's something weird going on in the last couple of games. We've seen that. I think there is a bit of a trickle-down effect when it comes to Elias Pettersson. And, hey, man, you start making the money, this is the pressure that comes with it.
I don't know. I don't buy that, say, JT Miller and Bo Horvat and those guys feel less confident
but
just because Pettersson's not going.
If there's a second or two of hesitation from Pettersson,
yeah,
there's an effect.
I get it, but if those guys are going to, you know, all of a sudden wilt because their top guy is struggling, I mean, I think that says more about them than it does about Pettersson.
I'm talking about the chemistry aspect, not necessarily their skills dropping off the map, but it does have an effect on that chemistry if there's this half-a-second delay or a delay. You know,
Pettersson's not playing well. You know, Travis goes to the lotto line when they're down a goal, and the lotto line isn't really generating much because Pettersson's not driving that line in a way that he normally would. You know, like there's a lot with Pettersson right now that's not working, and he's not the only one, Sat. You're totally right on that. This is a bigger problem. You know, the Canucks have needed, I tweeted it last week. Connor Garland and Nils Höglander have been the Canucks' best forwards every single night. It's either one or the other. Like, they're the guy we come away being like, wow, he was amazing. And why does it always have to be them? That's part of this conversation. Where is JT Miller, Brock Besser? Do we feel different if Besser finishes the two-on-one chance last night? Maybe we do, but they just, in general, they are not generating enough. And yes, Pettersson is chief among those right now that isn't anywhere near where we expect him to be. You know, I've referenced the shots, and shots per 60 right now through seven games, Pettersson is at 3.5. The only players that have played significant time on the Canucks at 5-on-5 that have less? Tucker Poolman and Tyler Myers. That's not what you want out of your number one center. It's not what you need out of your number one center. He has one assist at 5-on-5 through seven games. That's not good enough. And I know there's going to be people that say, oh, he's always just been a power play player. That's not true.
Yeah.
That's definitely not true when it comes to Elias Pettersson. So, yes, figuring out Elias Pettersson, I do have to agree with Randeep to a certain extent. It is still the number one thing to figuring out the overall offensive issues with this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, but at the same time, Brock Besser missed a couple of golden opportunities.
Yeah.
JT Miller hasn't quite looked the same, right? And hey, I don't disagree that Pettersson, when he's going and he's the most important player for this team, that is of incredible importance and he means a lot to this franchise. And when you get paid more than any other forward, yeah, I understand there's some responsibility that comes with it. But it's not an isolated issue with how they're playing.
Yeah.
You know, and when I look at it in that aspect, right, when I see it not being an isolated issue, to me, that's the bigger issue that I have here. Because if both lines are going, if other players are rolling and this guy doesn't look like he's bringing it, yeah, I can kind of understand the frustration and be like, okay, you know what? It's completely off on this aspect. But we're seeing the same thing again. Like, looking at the differentials, Pettersson's no worse on the scoring chances than any other top forward on this team, right? You look at JT Miller, and when he's going, and I see Joel from Oz mention this on Twitter, you know, that he's an emotional leader, and not always in the good way, because he wears his heart on his sleeves, right? So there's an upside to his game, but also there's a poor defensive effort at times as well. You see that with JT Miller at times, right? You see with Bo Horvat and that line defensively how they've been exposed. Now, Bo, give him credit the last couple of games. He's come up big with scoring goals. He did in Seattle with two big goals, and he had that great drive to the net last night that brought the building back to life and got them back into the game. So give him credit for doing some of that stuff there. But overall, you know, they're not sustaining any zone pressure at all as a team, right? And listen, I see people texting in and they're like, hey, you know, and maybe it is Travis Green's fault, and he was blaming the Wild for blocking the shooting lanes and all that sort of stuff. How did the goals get scored?
Yeah,
were they scored because the Canucks were being hemmed in shift after shift after shift, and it was sustained pressure?
No.
There were breakdowns. Look at the breakdowns that happened on the goals. Pullman on fault for one. You saw Rathbone on fault for a couple. And that's the game.
Burrows
right
had a rough moment on one of them as
well. Yeah. So you look at that pair had two rough moments, leads to two goals, and you have Pullman having a rough moment that leads to a third goal. I mean, those are breakdowns that happened.
The Canucks weren't terrible defensively last night. They had terrible breakdowns in transition that led to goals.
Now, here's a question. Now, to me, it's not a system thing right now. It's more about an execution thing. But are the players responding the way they need to respond? Is this lack of response and this lack of creativity offensively and this lack of desire at times, it seems, offensively, is that rooted in the players finding their way, or is it because they don't believe in what they're doing? And I think that's what we're trying to find out here. And I think if we're blaming one individual player, I do think that's looking beyond the big issue here. Because to me, it's either, hey, they'll figure this out, or they don't believe in what they're doing.
Okay, the figuring out aspect, that's where I lean, because we are seven games into the season. But like a good power play, your best player is supposed to save you in certain games. Your best player is supposed to put their best foot forward and be that X factor for you in games where your team is figuring out that model or figuring out that system. So I agree with you. I think this is the system aspect of it. But in these sort of games, you know, if you don't have Elias Pettersson on top of his game, you know, this is kind of that weird period. It's that growing pains as a team. You're trying to sort out who you are, what your identity is, and whether this system can work with this group of players. This is why Pettersson's important right now, and having him up to speed is because you need him to save you in certain games. It's kind of like a good power play, right? Some games, a really good power play will save you 5-on-5. We saw it with the Canucks a couple years ago, the bubble year. You kind of need that from your best player as well, where you're trying to find that identity. Does that player, you know, put their best foot forward, and can you steal a couple of games? And I think these games are kind of begging for it, where Pettersson hasn't played his best game. The game is kind of begging for that moment where he gets that goal or makes that pass, and he can save the team as they're trying to come together. So it is a bigger issue, but the Canucks in the last couple of games have required just something special from somebody other than Bo Horvat, and Pettersson hasn't been able to provide that early on in the year. That's why I think both things can be true. The system is a work in progress, but they need Pettersson to save them in some of these games.
So much reaction coming in. I want to point out this text, unsigned. Always sign your text. We love shouting you out here on the People's Show. You guys notice, right after Horvat's goal, there was a play. Besser was wide open, streaking towards the net. Pettersson had the puck along the boards, didn't make the pass, passed it to the point. And I remember it vividly, and I think, Zach, we both looked at each other and were like, there's Besser.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Pettersson hesitated, because that's a play he tries to make when he's on.
Yeah.
But he's second-guessing himself right now.
And I think, you know, that second-guessing is something that you see kind of throughout the lineup at times, right? Because, and that maybe gives more credence to, I think, what a lot of say, actual hockey people would say is, hey, they're trying to figure out how to play a more responsible style. They're overthinking things a little bit. As time goes on, that will come. And yeah, I mean, perhaps that is true to some sense. But also, if you're worried about making a mistake, or if you're looking at it and saying, should I be aggressive or should I be more conservative in that aspect? Is that kind of what's going on as well? Are you a bit too worried about trying to make a play? Because I don't see guys trying to make a lot of plays outside of Hoglander and Garland on a consistent basis, right? We saw Bo do it driving to the net.
Yeah.
We don't see other players really trying to make plays. JT Miller has at times, but also at times has been very lackadaisical with that puck, right?
Well, he goes backhand sauce at his own blue line, and it's like, whoa, what's going on here?
You're not seeing that kind of, you know, courage with the puck. You know, in soccer, obviously, you got to have courage.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not quite seeing that courage
from
these
guys. You
want to
see guys take players on. And take, right. You got to take, especially when you're down a goal or two, you got to take some risks. And I feel like, you know, they're kind of stuck in a state of, you know, wanting to be able to execute the coach's desire of being a more defensively responsible team, but it's not necessarily what comes naturally to this group. At least it doesn't feel that way.
When we looked at the top three lines or the makeup or at least the players that would be featuring in the top nine preseason,
yeah,
were we imagining a defense first system? I know defense is something hard checking is what every team wants to go for, but to your point, Sat, that creativity, that taking a chance, being courageous, that's what we were thinking of in the preseason when you saw Connor Garland, Hoglander, mm-hmm. Bo Horvat, Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, JT Miller. That, to me, feels like the identity. You have to respect defense. You have to play within your system. You have to make sure that you don't leave Thatcher Demko just to hang out on his own and make saves Connor Hellebuck style. I get that. But what's the strength of this team? Is it the back end? Not necessarily. It's the top three lines. It's those centermen. It's the wingers. So are you seeing enough of that? And yeah, I understand a coach doesn't want a run and gun team because that opens everything up and you're essentially saying, all right, Thatcher Demko, you might be out all on your own there, but there is more offense to give in this team.
Mm-hmm.
And the last two games, we've seen uncharacteristic mistakes on the back end compared to the first few games of the season. But if you're on the front foot a little bit more, you're taking that stress off the defense too. Tucker Poolman, the last two games, has looked bad.
Mm-hmm.
But so is the offense. And if you're not giving relief to the back end or to the defense, guess what? It's going to be sitting in your own a lot more. And we've seen so much of that. So play to your strengths is essentially what we're talking about here. I would love to see a little bit more, you know, not Mark Crawford, West Coast Express style of offense and forget about defense, but you do want to see a little, open them up just a little bit more.
It is interesting, and I think kind of what we're touching on is a theme of the early season, and that is, what is the identity of this team? And Travis, after the Buffalo game, we're not a run-and-gun team. So what is this team? What are they trying to be? Bo Horvat gave us a bit of the cliche, hard-to-play-against answer a couple of days ago here on the People Show. And that's fine. I kind of expect that from a lot of players and sometimes coaches. But when you say we're not a run-and-gun team, then what are you? And what should this team be? And are they trying? There's only so much you can do as a coach, but you have to coach to your roster and what the abilities of your players are. And I think that is part of the discussion on how to really unlock the full potential of the Canucks offense.
Well, and, you know, the interesting thing, too, is I'm not sure they know, right? Because it's just a cliche answer about, hey, we want to be hard in every area to play against. Of course, dude, every single team does. What does that mean, right? Like, what are you as a team? And right now, that identity isn't quite there. And even last year, we saw it at moments where they got going offensively, but a lot of the time, it was hard for them to get stuff generated, especially early in that season. The year before that, though, they were a team that I wouldn't say was playing, you know, all out and they would sell out all the time. But yeah, they were aggressive. They saw a chance they would get after it. On the forecheck, they would be more relentless on the puck. They would be really hard and try to find ways to get the puck and muck it up and get in front and create a lot of good scoring chances. That kind of desire is not there right now. Now, is that because of hesitancy, because you're trying to be better and more conscious defensively? Or is it because you don't quite believe in what's going on? And I see that's what a lot of people are texting into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650, and Hassan Stick on Twitter as well, who says, you know, maybe we've seen the same mistakes for over a few years. The players don't believe in the systems anymore. And I don't know if that's the case, and I think it's early to sit here and talk about, hey, you know, they've tuned out the coach. But I do think the longer it takes for this team to find its way and find its identity and really show what they are and not be as hesitant offensively, this question is going to persist.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of patience left anymore. I mean, I like Travis. He's been here for a long time, though. Jim's been here even longer than that. So when that happens, you don't have a lot of results, and you've had a couple of really bad years on the books as well. People aren't going to give you a lot of time to figure things out. But that's kind of where I'm at right now. Like, I'm not sure if this is a case of the players kind of feeling like the message is stale, or if it's simply them trying to find their way with being a bit more conscientious defensively.
Well, the buzzword for the last 2 years has been buy-in with Travis Green. It was a part of his preseason messaging last year. It was something that you heard in the bubble as well. But when you look at the system that they're playing right now, and, you know, Bo Horvat has mentioned that offense is, you know, when drives their offense is playing good defense. When they break out, you know, pucks clean and they, through the neutral zone, they get behind the defense and they forecheck hard, all of that. That's great. But what's one of the areas that they're lacking right now? Denying the defensive blue line is not very well. Zone entries into the Canucks zone, pretty easy these days. So when you want to play an aggressive checking game and you want to push back the pace the other way, denying that zone is very key. And what have we seen in the last two games, especially against Seattle, where, you know, teams are able to camp out in the Canucks zone a little bit. So denying that defensive zone hasn't been a strong suit. So I get the identity where you're saying you want to play fast and you want to go through speed through the neutral zone, but you're not seeing that necessarily. And that takes a collective effort. It takes the defenseman stepping up, obviously, as well, Sat. But, you know, that buy-in factor of everybody kind of pulling in that same direction defensively, if that's your identity, that's cool. But the execution hasn't quite been there.
It is the People's Show. Love seeing all your texts. There are a ton of them coming in on this conversation, and we will continue it coming up after the break and continue talking Canucks hockey here on the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. The breaking news of the hour is via TSN, and the story that they've been uncovering and was fully uncovered yesterday in the investigation against the Chicago Blackhawks. We are now watching, or had been watching, how Kyle Beach did an interview with Rick Westhead on TSN and told his story. Kyle Beach is the John Doe that the investigation was centered around against the Chicago Blackhawks. And the former Everett Silvertip, first-round draft choice of the Chicago Blackhawks, is telling his story about what happened with Brad Aldrich in 2010 during the Stanley Cup playoffs. And there is no amount of words that can say how awful it is what he has gone through. But to tell his story and to show the courage of coming out with his story about this, continuing to try and push for justice, that is the sign of a truly courageous human and a brave human. And I want to thank Kyle Beach for sharing his story today.
You know, what he's doing is absolutely courageous. And it's moments like this that, and it's not overstating things, that saves lives.
Yeah.
It really does. Because these are the types of moments where somebody steps up and tells their truth in a very difficult situation. And we've seen the cover-up from the Blackhawks. 10 years has gone by, 11 years has gone by, and they didn't want to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
He was screaming into a void. It took Rick Westhead, who did incredible reporting, Katie Strang as well, the incredible work they did to uncover all this and get the reporting out there and get Kyle Beach to a moment where now he can share his truth. Like, imagine living with this for a decade.
Yeah.
And nobody listened to you. Nobody believed you. And it took his story breaking. But now that he's come out and put a face to it, and he's spoken his truth, these moments save lives, because you don't have to necessarily suffer in silence. And there's so many people that go through these things and feel like they don't have an out.
He could have stayed as John Doe. He didn't have to do this. But he wanted to make sure that this is out there. So to your point, that it doesn't happen to other people. Moving forward, and in those clips, and I know some of you have had a chance to listen to them as you listen to this show, others are reading maybe, you know, transcripts of what happened, but if you go back to 2010, Kyle Beach says, word spread pretty quickly. I do believe that everybody in that locker room knew about it. They were basically the homophobic comments that were directed towards him. They were being made on the ice. Essentially, everybody knew about it. This is going to go back to those two individuals that are still currently employed by different hockey teams in the NHL, Joel Quenneville, who's coaching tonight for Florida, and Kevin Cheveldayoff. You know, all of these individuals that claim that they didn't know, I don't know how you can listen to Kyle Beach today talk about, you know, what he had to go through and still believe some of those statements. And even this morning, Joel Quenneville, you know, had his pre-prepared statement. He talked about, he essentially, you know, wanted to talk to the commissioner and all that, but guys, looking forward, these are important comments that he's making, And hopefully we get some sort of clarity on this from those two individuals as well, because they haven't answered yet. Yeah.
And just to give a little background, because I've seen some people mentioning what is exactly going on. Well, this goes back to 10 years ago, where a video coach of the Chicago Blackhawks allegedly sexually assaulted a player who went by the name of John Doe, who today revealed himself as Cal Beach, who was a BC boy, actually played his hockey back out here, was a draft pick, and a lot of talk actually during his draft year about the Canucks, whether they should take him. It was between him and Cody Hotson in a lot of fans' minds at the time.
Taking the pick right after Cody.
Right, so he's a player that is well known here. So there was an alleged sexual assault that happened. Mm-hmm. With Aldrich, who was the video coach at the time, and the player, Kyle Beach, went to management and told them about the incident, and they did nothing about it. They essentially covered it up, and years went on without anything happening. And the video coach, after everything happened, the Blackhawks wrote a letter of recommendation for another job where he went. Yeah. And he ended up actually being
charged. In 2013.
Yeah. So you're talking about letting a sexual predator run wild and not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
This is about the NHL. This is about the Blackhawks, but this is also about the PA as well. According to Kyle Beach, NHLPA Executive Director Don Fehr and the PA were made aware of Brad Aldrich's misconduct and did not pursue an investigation. So this goes far beyond the team. It also talks about, you know, player representatives of, were they listening?
It's an indictment again on hockey culture and sports culture, to be fair. Don't be a distraction. Fall in line. All of those types of things. And, you know, Joel Quenneville, you mentioned it, is supposed to be coaching the Florida Panthers this evening. Kyle Beach quoted as saying, "There is no way Joel Quenneville can deny knowing it." The investigation revealed that he was part of the meeting and where they decided to not do anything about it in the moment. And now Kyle Beach is coming out and saying there's no way Joel Quenneville can deny knowing it. This is a real problem for the NHL that he is slated to coach tonight for the Florida Panthers. It's on Gary Bettman to step in and say, you should not be behind the bench. We can have our meeting tomorrow, but you should not be behind the bench tonight. The Florida Panthers should do this. Joel Quenneville himself should say, I shouldn't be behind the bench tonight. Since he's so worried about distractions. Coaches talk so much about accountability. There's been a lot of people in this situation that showed zero accountability. And continue to show zero accountability. Thank you again, Kyle Beach, for sharing your story and being so courageous. It is the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda, Sportsnet 650. People's Show is presented by Grip Auto and Tire, quality service you can trust, and 14 locations to serve you. A lot still to come here on the People's Show, including a pair of lower bowl tickets to see the Canucks and Flyers Thursday night at Rogers Arena. Canucks already have one win over the Flyers this year. They'll look to make it a double tomorrow, as that is the next game on the schedule. We did have a lot of texts coming in about the Canucks and where the offense is trending with the team. And, you know, it always feels like it's going to continuously come back to Elias Pettersson. And diagnosing his game right now is, it's hard because, like, I know the talent is still there. We all do. But when is he going to find it? And that is the bigger question, because the Canucks have to, you know, bank some points here on this homestand. Tucker Poolman left last night's game with an injury. That's going to significantly affect the right side of defense. When we saw Kyle Burrows elevated, the Canucks defense struggled even more. So there is certainly some concerns on the defensive end of the ice, and those are forever going to be magnified if you can't figure out your offensive game plan. And I think that is what we are trying to figure out. What should this team's identity be? What is it? What are they trying to be? And what should it be? And are those two things different?
You know, I do think it. I think what this team should be is a, I wouldn't say run and gun, but it's an aggressive team. Like it, to me, what I look when I look at this hockey team, I look at this top six and this forward group and the strength of their defensemen, right? Like you look at OEL, you look at Quinn Hughes, you look at Tyler Myers. None of them are, say, grade A stud defensive defensemen that are going to shut things down. OEL's been very good. He's good at it. He's good defensively, don't get me wrong. Quinn Hughes is good defensively, don't get me wrong. Tyler Myers, well, it can be a bit of an adventure. But the strength that all three have is they're good skaters, they move the puck well, they can join the rush, they can do a lot of different things. So your defense is built on three highly paid players who are offensively minded. Look at your top six, it's loaded with players who are offensively minded. That should be the strength of this hockey team, right? And I can live with the odd mistake. I can live with, hey, breakdowns that happen and some goals against and having, you know, high event hockey if you're generating and being aggressive. Like, take control of the game. And that's what I want to see, right? And that's one of the things I have wanted to see from this team. Yeah, defensively, you want it to be better. But now when people are seeing slightly better defensive coverage, they're bemoaning the fact they're not creating offense, right? And people keep, you know, kind of moving back and forth on what needs to happen. And I see Langley, fun guy, talking about depth and size in the bottom six. Yeah, they need that, and Bailey's going to help out. We'll talk about that in a bit. But it comes down to your top guys. Like, you know, we keep having these conversations about everything, and it's like we're fighting over the garnish.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, the issue might be the meat. It might be the potatoes. Like, that's actually the issue here. We can sit here and fight about the lettuce on the side or, like, the potato wasn't cut properly or whatever the case is. But it doesn't matter if the meat's rotten, right? So that's where we're at right now. So we can sit here and talk about all these other things, but you got to get going offensively. And until this team finds that courage in their play again, I think it's going to be hard for us to be convinced about where they're trending.
I think the key word you mentioned is aggressive, though, because when this team is playing on the front foot, when they are forcing the issue, like we saw in Seattle in certain moments where that Garland, Pearson, Bo Horvat line, they were playing smart hockey, they're playing aggressive hockey. That was a moment where you're saying, okay, this, if this is the identity of the Canucks, if they can play this consistently, not only in that line, but across the lineup, that's what I see them being successful playing that way, because that's kind of the way that they profile, where they're on the front foot. Are they going to have, you know, controlled zone entries based on the way that we've seen them play? Probably not. They want to push the puck up the ice. They want to be aggressive on the forecheck. You're going to have to bring that effort every single time. And it's not maybe sexy on the eyes, because you have some high-impact players in Pettersson, in Besser, that like the puck on their stick. I get that. But the identity of the team, Sat, you know, we talked about the buy-in factor. Does that suit certain player style? I'm not sure. We're going to find out real quick here. But in the short term, you want to be aggressive. You want to be aggressive on the forecheck. Every single line has one or two players that may be able to profile that way. You talk about Justin Bailey. He's another player that can get aggressive on the forecheck. If they're going to be successful, you have to force the issue a little bit with those defensemen and those players that can get in with speed. Because once you take the speed out of it, if you don't have a buy-in in a forecheck game, you're useless. Because you're not putting pressure on the defensemen, they're transitioning the other way, and you're off to the races, and you're probably eating pressure of your own. So you better have buy-in playing a system like that. Otherwise, it's going to fall flat.
Yeah, and you know, I look at some of this is due to execution, of course, but even the way they go about generating offense, it feels to me too often it's the pass back to the point, looking for the tip, looking to get a rebound in front, whatever that may be. And that can work, but I would like to see some more lateral movement, some more east-west movement, working the puck down low, trying to get the puck more into that home plate area, into the slot, getting shots from closer to the goal. Too often, the Canucks are shooting from the perimeter, and that's, you know, that's just, it's a low shooting percentage. You know, it's a low percentage play.
You see, you hear the frustration from Travis postgame, right? He's talking about how they're not being hard enough. They're not being, you know, they're not going to those areas enough, right? And when I say courage, I'm not necessarily talking about being physical and going and battling and being a direct hockey team. I'm talking about, you know, taking control of the game and getting after it, being good on the forecheck, and if you have a chance, try to take it. Don't be, you know, as tepid as you have been kind of with the puck and offensively as a team so far this season. But Dan, you know, the problem too, more than anything for me, and this kind of comes back to the conversation we've had in so many different ways, right? What is this buy-in, or is this that, or is that whatever the case is? Because if you're feeling like what we're doing, we're not going to have success. I don't know. I don't have a feeling yet. That's this a hard thing
suit
to overcome.
My style.
Right. Ryan. Yeah. You have a built-in excuse. And that's one thing I want to see if that's what's going on here, right? Because if that's what's going on, that's a hard thing to overcome. And that's going to really put you in a spot as a coaching staff where you got to come up with new ways to get these guys inspired. But that's the reality of being a coach in the NHL, right? You got to change your message sometimes. You got to try to do your best to get the guys engaged and get the most out of them. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge here. And I don't think, you know, we can, you know, just say, hey, it's on the players and they got to be better. And Travis can talk about they have to be direct and they got to try harder and you can create offense from defense. But you got to make sure those guys believe that as well. And I think that's going to be his biggest challenge here is what you're saying falling on deaf ears, or are you finding a way to get that message through so they do play with a bit more courage?
Yeah, we got a lot of reaction coming in on Twitter and on the Dunbar Lumber text line 650-650. Jay Canuck coming in on Twitter saying, get offensive puck possession through the forecheck, not controlled zone entries. Did Pedersen and Miller get the memo? Bo's been playing that style of game. If that's the style you want to play, we've seen Bo.
So
with
Jay
that.
Canuck wants more dump and chase?
From high skill guys. But that goes back to the whole...
Do you want your high skill guys dump and chase? But that's not what I want. I want to see Pedersen streaking through the neutral zone and gaining the blue line with speed. We don't see enough of that.
This is in reference to Bo Horvat's comments with Ben Kuzma in the province.
Right.
And to Jay Canuck's point, he did link that article. But in that article, Bo Horvat talks about the style of play that they play. Offense from
but
defense.
But not every line is going to be the same with how they generate offense.
No, they're not going to be. But the question here is that when you talk about that commitment and that buy-in factor, right, is that what you're trying to get from that top line when you're playing, right? Is Travis Green trying to play that style with that top line as well?
Yeah.
And but, it feels like in certain moments, yes.
Well, when the lotto line is together, like they're not a dump and chase kind of a line, right? They work the puck down low and they work with each other and create opportunities, pull defenders out of, you know, and out of their positions and create space for each other, creating opportunities in that way.
But when they're separated, the identity kind of changes there.
Yeah, it does to an extent, but this is funny because I just started laughing because last year, remember when the Canucks were getting absolutely blown out early in the season and they were putting themselves into tough spots? How many mistakes did we see them make? How many over-aggressive plays did we see them make? We're like, why don't you just dump it in and chase every once in a while? Like, why are you trying to, like...
Simplify.
Right, simplify things. And now it's, like, going the other way. And it's like, again, to me...
But there's got to be, like, a happy medium.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, but, again, like, I don't want to be, like, trying to repeat myself here, but we can sit here and talk about dump-ins or this and that, but what's very clear here is there is no offensive confidence, right? Yeah. There's no confidence in, hey, how we're trying to approach things. And Munn mentions, hey, maybe they should be more aggressive like the West Coast Express era teams. What those teams would do, it wasn't so dissimilar in the sense of what how the playing styles have evolved the past 20 years or whatever, but... they would have a very active blue line. All the time, you would see a defenseman join the rush and really push. And what Mark Crawford would say at the time was, you have the green light. We activate the blue line at all times. You feel like you can go, you go. And I think, you know, with this defense, there is a green light to certain guys, but there's also a lot of, okay, we got to hang back here. We got to be more conservative. And I think on the whole, the defense hasn't been as bad as people make it out to be, but you're not also getting that offensive push. Like, chances aren't being created with Quinn Hughes on the ice, with Oliver Ekman-Larsson on the ice. So by... whether this is by design because you're being more conservative or if it's the players being a bit hesitant, that's the big issue here. Because there are moments, like you mentioned, Dan, and somebody texted in where Pedersen had Brock Besser with that kind of diagonal pass. You could hit him and he just decided not to. Was that because he didn't see him? He's being a jerk? I don't think it's one of those situations. It might just be like... maybe that's a too high risk a play right now because maybe late in a shift and I make a bad pass, it might end up in a rush chance. Maybe I don't make that play. But we didn't see them hesitate in moments like that in the past. And I think that's what they have to get back to here.
It is the people's show. More coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line, also on the phone line. Let's go to Mike in Victoria. Mike, what's up? Your thoughts on the Canucks?
Well, one, you got Tyler Myers, who's 6'8" and however many pounds. And I saw at least three times in the game, he's right beside a guy who's carrying the puck, but he's trying to check him with his stick. Smash him with your body and take him out of the freaking play. Like, come on. And number two, I'm sorry, but Green's got to go, man. He can't coach this team anymore. This team's not good for that. And now I got to go into the Chicago Blackhawks stuff because this is ridiculous. the stuff that they have done is absolutely ridiculous. So the punishment should be absolutely ridiculous. And they should be wiped of all three of their Stanley Cups during this time. And they shouldn't be allowed to be in the first round, get a first round draft pick for the next 11 years so that they can suffer the same suffering that Beach suffered for the last 11 years.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I will agree that the punishment was far too lenient, considering a penalty to the New Jersey Devils for circumventing the cap on Ilya Kovalchuk's contract was less in dollar value. You know, no draft. There was draft picks involved. There was much heavier penalties we've seen in other instances that are far less serious than what happened here. So I will agree with you on that. And again, a lot of thoughts with Kyle Beach right now and how courageous he was coming forward. We'll talk about that coming up more as the course of the show goes on. But this is the story of the season right now.
Yeah.
The Canucks, they win a couple of games. Everybody's feeling good. You go into the home opener, they lose one, and feels like everything is crashing down. It just really intensifies, magnifies how much pressure is on this team right now to get results, Randy.
It totally does, and this is going to be a roller coaster of a season, right? Mm-hmm. You get a couple of games, then you're mapping out the playoffs. Then a couple of losses, what happens the other way? You're saying, all right, what's going to happen if they continue to lose? It's one of those years in Vancouver, and we're not, you know, the only ones that are looking at it this way across the league. There are other teams that are going through some situations right now that, you know, Toronto versus Chicago tonight, and Toronto's thinking the exact same thing. It's just, you know, knowing what this season means, I'm not one to overreact, but this year kind of calls for it because it is a big situation for this franchise. Playoffs are the expectation. We just got to remind ourselves, though, 82-game sample size, right? There are some good things about this roster. Connor Garland, Nils Höglander, and some of the things we've seen from the back end, OEL and Tyler Myers especially, and Thatcher Demko, mm-hmm. can't leave him out. But there's a few things that are work in progress. Is that defense and Tucker Pullman and some of those younger players on the back end and that third pairing as good as we thought they were maybe a couple of games ago? Maybe not, right? We've seen some things happen in the last couple of games here where you're saying, okay, wait a second. The way that they're playing right now is not making those defensemen look good. So it's going to be one of those seasons where it's going to be super intense because of what are the implications?
Yeah.
We all see, you know, if this goes well, then the future maybe looks a little bright. If it doesn't, we've talked about what might happen, and that's why it's so intense.
Well, and people want results. And I think, you know, like we kind of mentioned a bit earlier, it's, you know, going on year eight with Jim Benning, right? Now, you know, you're on to, what is it, year five now for Travis Green as the head coach of the team. So he's been here for a few years, right? And people, they've kind of grown tired of the losing. They've grown tired of a lot of things that have happened. So there is really no patience here when it comes to, you know, results and them not being there. So I kind of understand. I think it's way too early in the season to be talking about, hey, letting people go and firing people. I mean, to me, that's just way too early of a conversation. But I do think it shows you that in a season like this, where you're trying to get the fan base re-engaged, you're trying to sell tickets, so you're trying to show your players that you're moving in the right direction, there's a lot on the line, right? So that pressure is going to be mounting. That's why you see the frustration already. And, you know, part of me, like I said earlier, I feel like, hey, they'll be okay. They'll figure it out. You can look at it positively and say, hey, they've been able to get some results now. 7 points in seven games is not great, but hey, they haven't played well yet. So when they play well, maybe there is something to this team being good. And, you know, once those pieces start falling together, maybe we can be optimistic about it. The question is, how long does it take for that to happen? But perhaps we'll look back at this in a couple of weeks and say we are overreacting.
Well, if you start getting some results, you start getting more buy-in. I think you're seeing that right now with the Calgary Flames. You know, they've won four in a row, and it seems like they're really buying what Daryl Sutter is selling. So I think that's kind of what the Canucks need. They need a couple of wins where the team can feel that this strategy, this new way of playing is working. And you always need the results to back it up, always. There's no moral victories, as we often talk about here on the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. A statement from the Chicago Blackhawks came down about 15 minutes ago, less than that, 10 minutes ago, in regards to Kyle Beach, who revealed himself as the John Doe in the investigation from 2010. This statement from the Chicago Blackhawks. First, we would like to acknowledge and commend Kyle Beach's courage in coming forward. As an organization, the Chicago Blackhawks reiterate our deepest apologies to him for what he has gone through and for the organization's failure to promptly respond when he bravely brought this matter to light in 2010. It was inexcusable for the then executives of the Blackhawks organization to delay taking action regarding the reported sexual misconduct. No playoff game or championship is more important than protecting our players and staff from predatory behavior. The Blackhawks have implemented numerous changes and improvements within the organization, including hiring a new leadership team that is committed to winning championships while adhering to the highest ethical, professional, and athletic standards. It's all nice words to be saying. Time will tell how true they are to it.
Yeah, that one line of no playoff game or championship is more important than protecting our players and staff from predatory behavior. It's a good line in a press release, but you got to practice that.
Oh,
they hadn't in the past.
Yeah,
they got to change that internally. That culture's got to change, not only in the Chicago Blackhawks, but hockey in general, sports in general.
You know, you kind of wonder, and you kind of mentioned, and people have talked about how the punishment to the Blackhawks has been light. And I agree, right? I agree, yeah. In a big, big way. And I'm going to be careful with what I'm about to say, because I'm not trying to say, you know, people knew or whatever. But one of the things about this type of culture in general, and I'm not saying this has happened in other organizations and it's been covered up and everybody forgot about it, but things of this nature or of things happening that have been covered up by organizations is probably something that's happened numerous times. And then maybe not specifically like this or whatever it is, but I think there's been lots of things that have been hidden by organizations, by behavior from people in organizations, by behavior from players sometimes, or executives, or just staff with teams. And throwing stones from glass houses from the league's perspective, where it's kind of like, hey, you come with a big, big one here, then someone would be like, hey, well, what about that situation you guys didn't talk about? Like, how much unknown stuff is out there that the league's being a little bit careful with how hard they punish these things? Because if things start coming out from the past like this elsewhere, could be a big, big problem in the league's hands.
Well, and, you know, it's not singularly part of hockey's story. There's a story that hit close to home not too long ago with the Vancouver Whitecaps and Canada Soccer and Bob Berarda. And that's still being played out in the legal system right now as it keeps getting delayed. But even Canada Soccer just released a statement last week in compliance with the women's national team that they are going to continue to work with their processes on how to handle these things because they weren't handled properly in the past. And this is, what, 14 years on that we're talking about this and these situations that happened? It happens in far too many situations and areas of the globe. It's not just sports. It's everywhere. And stories like Kyle Beach coming out today when Sierra McCormack told the story of what happened with the Whitecaps.
Yeah.
And those are the people that are forcing change and bringing the stories to light, bringing justice. And it takes a tremendous amount of courage. It's not easy. And still, the NHL is dealing with it. And I'm sure there will be more to come from Kyle Beach telling his story today. It is the People's Show. Coming up, Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650.